My story today is the story of a personal journey, a journey from being a less generous person to hopefully being a more generous person. I've learned to see generosity in life, and I've studied it in books. The concepts and opinions I'm going to present are really my own only. It's not a reflection of the UU religion here or the board or anyone else. It's really my personal journey, and take from it what you will. I've been looking for a way that I can grow spiritually and make a difference to our community. I've settled on stewardship. And stewardship is a standing committee of the congregation. It's petered out in the last few years, and it's in need of volunteers and leadership, and I hope to spend time doing that as a board member. I know it's a stretch for me, but I've learned that there's no growth possible unless we get out of our comfort zone. My comfort zone involves my garden, a fruit and vegetable garden that often draws a lot of looks and comments from people passing by. It's my contact point with the neighborhood. So on the day in question, my friend Beth came down and looked over the fence and said, "Richard, I really love your garden. It gives me such joy." And then she put something in my hand, and I looked down, and it was $20 bills. There were five of them. And I said, "Beth, what are you doing? I can't take this money. What's the point? What is it?" And she said, she was backed away and said, you just take it. It's something that I do." And then she walked on down the road. And I was thankful, but I was very confused. I'm not used to getting handouts. We're not used to seeing money pass around between us in that way. It was a one-time thing, but it really stuck with me. You see, I have not felt particularly generous in my life. I've not done what I see any number of the people in this room doing, giving their time, their talent, working with the homeless, doing all the things you see out in the patio. It just wasn't me. Many of you spend this time and resources making the world a better place, and I see that and I marvel. Generosity. Please take a minute to think about your own personal definition of generosity. I'm going to give you one in a little bit that might be a little different than what you're thinking. My attitudes, like yours, were probably established in childhood. My parents were Depression-era folks. What did my parents teach me about money? They taught me to be frugal. Here are a few remembered lessons. A fool and his money are soon parted. Have you heard that one before? Here's another. He has more money than sense, meaning common sense, of course. Well, the first thing I learned from books is that stewardship is not just about fundraising. And let me emphasize that. It's not just about fundraising. A steward is defined as someone who takes care of something, be it a business, a ship, a farm, a church, takes care of it for the benefit of someone else. That means all of you here. When it is done without pay, it's a gift of love and generosity. The goal of stewardship in a church is not just to manage the fundraisers, like it says in our policies and procedures, but really to create a congregation of generous people. I have read that in some African-American congregations, the offering basket is passed not once, but multiple times in each service. Why? They do it because generosity is a central drama in the act of worship. Now I asked myself, what drama could there possibly be in an offering? I timed our offering a couple of weeks ago. It takes 30 seconds. Not much time to be dramatic. I had to find out more. It really bugged me. So I went back to the original source of the quote, a book by Peter Gomes called The Good Book. He was an African-American preacher and theologian at Harvard University. And he told how the collection was done in the Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church of his childhood. So it worked like this. The offering music would start, and everybody would get up out of their chairs and come forward down the aisles, and there was an offering basket in the center of the church. and they would come and put their offering in, dancing and singing in the aisles as they go back around to their seats. And up front, the stewards of the congregation were counting the money as it came in. And if there wasn't enough, if they didn't reach their goal for that day, the music would start up again. And everybody gets up and comes back around again. So Gomes said that to a kid, this was pure theater and the most dramatic part of the service. It also, I suspect, implanted the idea of generosity into the mind of an impressionable youngster. In contrast, in white Protestant churches like ours, and this is Peter Gomes talking, not me, we tend to downplay the offering. Money amongst us is a bit like sex. We know we need it, but we don't like to see too much of it in public. This guilty feeling makes it difficult for us to receive and celebrate the positive generosity feeling that is the main point of the offering. Let me tell you a story about generosity that you might find amusing. It's about one of our founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, and a preacher you probably never heard of, George Whitefield. Franklin, as you know, is a politician, a statesman, a scientist, an author, and more. George Whitefield was famous in the 1800s for gathering crowds numbering in the thousands to hear him speak. He's been called America's first true cultural hero. He was an Anglican priest, started out that way anyway, and became a Methodist early on when that church was founded. One account of Whitefield's gathering says the following: the crowd elbowed, shoved, and trampled over themselves to hear of divine things from the famed Whitefield. It sounds like a Rolling Stones concert to me. On the day of our story, Franklin went to hear Whitefield preach in Philadelphia. One famous man going to hear another famous man speak. Two big egos. Franklin writes these words in his autobiography: I happened soon after to attend one of Whitefield's sermons, in the course of which I perceived he intended to finish with a collection, and I silently resolved he should get nothing from me. I had in my pocket a handful of copper money, 3 or 4 silver dollars, and 5 pistoles in gold. Pistoles were Spanish coins that were in circulation that time of the history. So we've all been there. I know I have. You wake up, you feel in a bad mood, you don't feel particularly generous. That's how he started out. Franklin continues, as he, Whitefield, proceeded, I began to soften and concluded to give the coppers. Okay, he's going to ready to give the pennies. Now, continuing, another stroke of his oratory made me ashamed of that and determined me to give the silver. Okay, now the dimes and nickels would go. And he, Whitefield, finished so admirably that I emptied my pocket, wholly, into the collector's dish, gold and all. So what just happened? This story is a beautiful example of the evolution of generosity in a person's mind. We don't know what Whitefield said. I wish I did. But we do know how Franklin responded. He responded by moving from a place of giving absolutely nothing to giving everything he had. That's generosity at work. Clearly, the spiritual nourishment he got from being so generous is more valuable to him than the coins in his pocket. The crucial point of the story to me is that we, like Franklin, cannot get this spiritual nourishment from a sermon if we give nothing, even if we listen carefully to every word. I promise to give you a definition of generosity, and it's one I learned from a child, or rather from a school full of children. It isn't just religions that teach values anymore. Schools teach them too. Take this list of 12 character traits from my daughter's middle school. Some of them are honor, self-control, creativity, accountability, boldness, enthusiasm, discretion, diligence, sincerity, and generosity. In their school, one is one for each month, and every month a couple of people that have demonstrated that particular trait get an award at the school. So I wanted to give you their definition of generosity, and I want you to compare it to what you were thinking about earlier. So here's the generosity definition: carefully managing my resources so I can freely give to those in need. Let me read it again. Carefully managing my resources so I can freely give to those in need. There are two points that I want to emphasize in that definition. The first one is managing my resources. I had a professor in Canada whose wife, unbeknownst to him, joined a cult and became a Mooney. He was a first-generation Japanese whose father was a sharecropper for potatoes. In other words, he worked someone else's field for a share of the crop. When my professor was out of town one week in Vancouver at a conference, his wife sold his house, cleaned out all his bank accounts, and left him destitute, moved to Oregon to be with the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. That is an extreme example of not managing your money. We are not the Moonies. We don't want to jeopardize your retirement savings. We don't want you to have to sell your house to meet your obligations. We all need to properly manage our resources, but at the same time to give freely to the causes that we support, including our fellowship, especially our fellowship. The second point I want to emphasize is the definition. In the definition is the word freely. Freely give to others. There are two kinds of money I've learned. There's sad money and there's happy money. We pay our taxes with sad money. But we buy someone we love a birthday present with happy money. And I cannot emphasize this strongly enough. Only happy money involves generosity. And only happy money gives us the good karma that's on the order of service today. Still on the subject of children and money, for those of us still involved with children and grandchildren, how do our kids learn generosity? How do they? Well, here's an idea I read. When your child starts getting allowance, say 50 cents, split it up into four coins, one quarter, two dimes, and one nickel, and tell them the quarter is what you save until you get $5, and then you can buy something big. The two dimes you can spend right away, and the nickel is for charity. And congregations that do this and put the nickel in the basket, the children are very excited to be able to do that. So it's something to think about doing. What do we do for older children? Here are eight traits that, if we get exposed to them before the age of 30, correlate with a future generosity of spirit. Think about them in your own context, and I'll tell you a little bit about my experience. The first one is the experience of being seen as a child. What that means is not being invisible, not ignored, not like the saying in my day, children should be seen and not heard, which I took literally, meaning not to talk when grown-ups were present. The second one is having at least one publicly active parent, not my parents. Third, growing up in a home that is hospitable to the wider world. Absolutely not for me. Living in a safe yet diverse neighborhood. I grew up in a very safe neighborhood, a small town in Canada, but not very diverse. We had one Jewish family and no people of color. Number five, actively participating in a religious life. Well, I went to church with my mother passively for 12 years. Nothing active. We didn't have a core meeting area. We didn't have food. We never went to any church functions. It was just in the door and out the door at the end of the service. So I can't really claim that. Having contact with adults in the community who model commitment. No, don't remember any of that. Participating in youth groups. Wait, yeah, I was in Cub Scouts until I got the uniform, and then I quit. Having mentors. Okay, I can finally say yes, I had a mentor. He was my father's age, living up at the cottage on the lake, who let me shoot his .45 handgun, and he regaled me with the stories of his colorful sex life. That was my mentor. I've been linking generosity and stewardship together in this sermon, but stewardship is much, much more than generosity. It requires responsibility and a sense of ownership as well. Let me conclude now with a definition of stewardship in a church setting. I'm going to say it twice because it's a bit of a mouthful. Stewardship is the growing, nurturing, promoting, and building the gifts, the call, and the spiritual vocation of members of a faith community. So let me do that again. Stewardship is the growing, nurturing, promoting, and building the gifts, the call, and the spiritual vocation of members of a faith community. And I'm going to go over those three and explain what they are. The first one is our gifts. That's our aptitude, our ability, and our money. For example, our aptitude and our ability are the gifts that we share when we give them as auction items. We tap into people's experience, their hobbies, we make an auction item out of it, and people get together with each other and learn someone's new ability. The second one is our call, which is our willingness to proclaim the congregation's spiritual message. For example, when we go into the wider world doing social action and social justice, we are proclaiming our spiritual message. And third, our spiritual vocation, which is our willingness to take up volunteer efforts to support the community. For example, when we volunteer to be a worship associate, an usher, a greeter, a kitchen helper, or a member of a committee, we are doing our spiritual vocation. Stewardship promotes all three of those. What is my first act of stewardship? Well, I have printed a list of all the members in the congregation, all 249 of us, and I've checked off the people I know by name and face. I may not know them well, but at least I know a person and can connect a face to it. And I counted them up, and I know 200 people. I came here looking for community, and boy, did I find it. I want to meet the rest of you, too, so please stop by the happenings table and introduce yourself. I'm going to be out there for the next 2 months with this green clipboard, looking to find out your gifts, your aptitudes, your abilities, your hobbies, so we can sign them up for the auction that's coming up. So now, my fellow congregants, my generous friends, you haven't seen the last of me. Thanks so much, and blessed be.